Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Joining us tonight from the right, we have
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
And from the left, we have
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who is proud as hell to have a veteran as a twin brother from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a progressive feminist from Kensington, Maryland, and I don't even have a twin brother.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, a passionate moderate and a proud Democrat this week from smoke-filled Los Angeles, California. We want to remind everybody to check out our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where we often post commentary that we write during the week. Rebecca, you posted another Pop Goes the Political Culture this week, correct?
Yes, I did, Kevin. I was talking about jewelry shaped like penises.
And who isn't these days?
Well, you know, I mean, if once you find out that such a thing exists, how can you not talk about it?
Exactly.
I also talk about the new New Yorker cover, which is, you know, equally artistic.
Which makes reference to the number of women and minorities now in our Congress, which is one of the reasons I'm a proud Democrat this week.
Yay!
But before we get to the midterms, which we're going to talk about ad nauseum, we want to acknowledge Veterans Day and also Armistice Day. 100 years ago, World War I ended. But let's talk about Veterans Day first. Obviously, we all appreciate our veterans and people who serve us now. Anything you'd want to add to that?
I would, if it's okay. I'm going to step all over Greg here.
Oh, good.
Because,
go for it.
Yeah. Because he had mentioned before we went on the air here that his twin brother did two tours in Iraq, and I kind of feel like I had a role in sending him there. I've never been an elected official, but I supported, voted, and volunteered for the elected officials who did send him, and I still think it was the right thing to do. Greg's brother was among the many Iraqi veterans who were the instrument of removing Saddam Hussein from power and giving Iraqis a chance at a better life. And what he and they did for the Iraqi people and what they did for the American people, those are things for which I will be very, very grateful. And, you know, they're veterans of World War I and World War II and the Korean War and the Vietnam War and the First Gulf War. They all deserve praise and they all will receive it. But those who have served and are serving in Afghanistan and in Iraq directly, they may not get the support and the thanks that they deserve, but they will get them from me. I appreciate what they did for me, for my country, and for those two countries. Not everyone agrees with me on that, and that's okay, but I just wanted to say to Greg's brother and all those who served with him, thank you very much.
Well, I agree. I mean, obviously, the veterans are not the policymakers, and we're not going to debate the policy of the Iraq war, but George and everybody else who's fought in Iraq and Afghanistan and the other wars that DJ has mentioned and the ones that we didn't mention, we respect you and appreciate you infinitely.
Yes. Hear, hear.
So with that, let's go to the midterms. Guys, what do you think? Was it a blue wave? Was it a red wave? Was it a mixed message? I have my opinions, but why don't you tell us yours first?
Well, I think, you know, it went about like I expected, maybe even a little better in the House than I expected. The biggest surprise to me was Claire McCaskill losing her race in Missouri. And I'm going to lay the blame for that right at DJ's feet, because he predicted that no incumbent Democrats would lose. So someone clearly had to, and Claire took that hit. So DJ, what the fuck?
Those were not my exact words. My exact words were, I would not believe a Democratic incumbent senator would lose until I saw it with my own eyes. And it turns out I saw it three times on Tuesday night. So there it is. I will acknowledge, however, Democrats appear to have gained at least 38 seats in the House, and they're getting very close to my prediction of 40. So at least on the House, I'm far closer to being correct than I was in the Senate. I do think what I found interesting was that in this midterm election, because both sides got their base out and got their base out heavily, this was a midterm election decided by the swing voters. and the swing voters went overwhelmingly with the Democrats. And it showed in suburban areas and light urban areas across the country, not just in blue states, but also in red states. Stacey Abrams did better in Gwinnett County than just about any Democrat in the post-civil rights era. Democrats won House seats in Oklahoma City, in Dallas, in the suburbs of Atlanta. There is a majority Democratic delegation in Arizona and in Virginia. There are majority Democratic votes for Congress in North Carolina, although they were gerrymandered into a heavy minority. And Kyrsten Sinema appears to have won her race in Arizona.
Woohoo!
Woo, woo! You should see the little dance I'm doing.
Greg, before I throw to you, I just want to say one thing. If you guys will remember last week, I said when we were making our predictions that the only race I was willing to bet on that I was that confident of was that Andrew Gillum was going to win in Florida. So with that in mind, I hereby recuse myself from any jokes about DJ's predicting abilities.
But that race isn't over yet either. That one's headed to a recount.
That's true.
And it's the automatic recount trigger. It's not that Gillum is requesting the recount. It falls within whatever the threshold is for double checking.
Right. The 1%, I believe. You know, I know it wasn't a contest, and I know, you know, we don't score ourselves like who's better at predictions, but I just want to say, like, I won.
Remind us why, Greg. Remind us why.
I'm better than all you guys because I said that the Democrats were going to win the coasts, and we did really well on the East and West Coasts, and we would get crushed. Joe Donnelly in Indiana, Claire McCaskill, and all of those. And yes, even Sinema, it's not over. I still think she's not going to win. And I'm not just saying that because I like to see Rebecca tears and like oh, this is like my favorite
thing. I'm crying right now.
Oh, she will be.
I'm crying like a kid who just got sand kicked in her eyes in the sandbox.
Oh my gosh. No, I honestly think that one's going down in flames. Like, hard, but it's going to take a little while. The only one that
you're the only one who thinks that.
I know.
All the prognosticators disagree with you, Greg.
Trust me, but the only one I was really surprised at and that I completely misread was the state of Kansas.
Kansas was a real repudiation of brownback conservative republicanism. I think Kansas finally, like, they hit bottom. They had no revenue. They were what? Schools were closed one day a week, and teachers had to go on strike in order to get, I don't know, whatever the Oliver Twist bowl of gruel they were getting paid. and people in Kansas were sick to death of it, and they stepped up and said, no, we're changing this.
There are two things about Kansas that people repeatedly forget. One is that Kansas is, in fact, is much more of an oil state than people realize. So they got hammered by the drop in oil prices that messed with the market in 2014, and they never really recovered. The second thing is at the state government level, particularly for governor's races, Democrats are usually pretty competitive in Kansas. Catherine Sebelius won two terms in the teeth of the Bush administration in Kansas. So a Democrat getting elected governor of Kansas is not much of a surprise, particularly when it's an idiot like Kris Kobach running. So Kansas should not have been all that much of a surprise. And I'm going to challenge you, Greg. Greg, you are I will sit why you're wrong in Arizona. Is that
okay, go ahead.
This is going to be the Arizona predictions.
Go ahead. Yeah. This is awesome.
Is that Republican in Arizona, what Republicans really need to win are big votes coming out of Maricopa County, which is Phoenix and the surrounding suburbs. McSally is losing Maricopa County. Maricopa County is doing what Oklahoma City and Dallas and the Georgia suburbs and Jacksonville and the Richmond suburbs and Virginia Beach. And I could go on and list them forever. All of the suburbs and small cities that abandoned the Republicans for the Democrats. Phoenix did it too. So the place where Martha
McSally are doing it too.
Yeah.
Apparently Maricopa, the burbs
right.
further out from Phoenix, like the circle is widening of Sinema's right. support.
Exactly. So the place where McSally needs votes to make Greg right, Sinema's winning that county. It's not going to happen. It just isn't.
Which, if correct, and DJ, I think you are correct on that, means that the Democrats will lose one, maybe two seats in the Senate, depending on what happens in that contested contest between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson in Florida. And the Democrats won some 35 seats in the House, plus, and that's a net gain, plus They took 6 to 7 governorships, and they improved their lot in many state houses. So it really was a blue wave. Okay, so let's talk about what's next. First of all, for politics in general and for the Democratic Party. Who wants to take that first?
I'll take it. So I think the Democrats have just two things. It's very simple. One, they have to vote out Nancy Pelosi.
Okay. Oh, not going to happen. But okay.
That's not what I said. I didn't say like it's not going to happen. It's not. And
you're
we're
saying
not talking,
that it should happen. Okay.
It should happen. And we're not talking about like speculative fiction here either. I mean, this is easy. And it's not like we should also get in someone who's another old guard. We need to get someone younger, someone with fresh ideas, and someone who doesn't have 30 to 40 years of baggage that the Republicans can all of a sudden brand as a terrible human being, which they've done. And Nancy Pelosi should say, you know what? This is good for the party. I have done great things, and she has for the party, so she should step aside. Now, you guys can mock me in just a moment, because the second thing they should do, and this one won't happen either, but why not? They should not spend all their time opening commissions and hearings and whatnot on the Trump campaign. They should actually try to, wait for it, legislate. Okay? Bipartisan stuff, you know, infrastructure, actually get some things done, because in 2 years they could say, hey, we got clean water here. We fixed this bridge. Hey, Arizona, we got you a new post office. Whatever. And they could actually say, we protected pre-existing conditions, all the things that they ran on and they promised, instead of saying, hey, we got you Trump's tax cuts.
Okay, I want to take you on this, Greg.
Go ahead.
Okay, I see it exactly the opposite. So I think the next big battle politically is not between Republicans and Democrats, but it's between Democrats and Democrats. It's the battle that you and I are going to have right now.
Go ahead.
And we'll have Rebecca and DJ weigh in as well.
Do it.
DJ and I are just sitting here drinking.
I'm waiting for what Kevin has to say and drinking.
Yeah. I think that, Greg, I understand what you're saying, but I would almost say it should be the exact mirror image of that. If the Democrats pass bipartisan legislation and hand Trump legislative wins, is it good for the country? Yes, it is. But it will go so much further towards ensuring that Trump gets reelected. I'm sorry to have to say this. It's a very partisan thing to say. But if we give him legislative victories, it will be to our never-ending detriment. Giving him any kind of legislative victory going into 2020 will only make our path to winning the White House that much harder. Now, I know that's different than being good legislators and maybe good Americans. I'm talking now as a Democrat who desperately does not want to see a second Trump administration. And I'm just telling you, if we work with him on immigration, if we work with him on infrastructure, if we get some kind of a bill out of Congress that protects pre-existing conditions, I want to see all those things as much as anybody else in the world. I'm just telling you that politically, he will kill us with being bipartisan. We will not win points with the voters for being bipartisan.
All right. Let me respond to that.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
I'm just sitting here smiling like a Cheshire cat.
The only thing is, Trump is better at this. So if we do not legislate, even if we stall him, if we do nothing, he will make us look bad. He will say, you know, in the 2 years they've done nothing. And you know what? He's better at this. The Republicans are better at this. Now, if we pass some legislation, if we clear up, if we do all those things, then we can make ourselves look better. We can do something. And you know what? He is better at that too. Hey, look what I did. Look what I did. But at least we get some victories. We can either have something or we get a whole lot of negative points.
But Greg, the message to the 2020 voter is, hey, things are working the way they are with Trump in the White House and Democrats being bipartisan. That is not a winning message.
Or the message is, hey, when Democrats are in control, they work with people. Okay.
Yeah. Trump, good luck with that message. good luck with bipartisanship as a message going into a 2020 election against Donald Trump.
Rebecca, anything you want to say here at this point, or do you want me to jump in? I'll leave it to you.
I think it's cute that everybody thinks that there might be legislating in the next couple of years.
Well, I agree with you.
There's not going to be any legislating.
I said this is what they should do. There's not going to be any legislating.
Okay, first of all, we could try offering bipartisan solutions to Mitch McConnell and to the White House. But do you remember when we offered Trump everything he wanted? I think it was, I don't even remember what bill it was on, where Nancy Pelosi went up there and was saying it with Chuck Schumer, and they're like, hey, we'll build your wall. And Trump said, fuck you, no, we're not building my wall. And suddenly everything exploded.
Right, it was the
That's
dreamers.
What's going to happen. Even if we were attempting to legislate on a bipartisan basis with Trump, he would blow it up because that's all he does. He blows shit up. He's bad at this. And I'm ride or die on Nancy Pelosi. This is not the moment for on the job training. I also, you know, you talk about Nancy Pelosi having baggage. What baggage? The only thing that anyone can ever say about Nancy Pelosi is she's a San Francisco liberal. And she's like, yes, that is true, and continues doing what she's doing. She's unflappable. She doesn't care what the press says. And her knowledge of her caucus and what each individual member needs to get to yes when she needs them to get to yes is unparalleled. She has the ability to work within a very diverse caucus of Democrats and get the big things done. Not that big things are going to get done, because we are just reaching total partisan gridlock. We are at an impasse, but it's a good impasse, because for 2 years, nobody's going to fuck with the ACA and nobody's going to fuck with entitlements.
Then make her majority whip. But the problem with Nancy Pelosi is that she has a brand that half the country hates for no reason. And I can mention her and I can use that exact thing. Hey, what do you have against Nancy Pelosi? And they go, well, we don't like her. What don't you like about her? And they go, I don't know. And that's the problem. There's
but
a
would
brand.
Do that about
any
to Democrat.
Anyone who got elected.
No,
they would do that to Adam Schiff. Hoyer.
They would do that to Julian Castro. The other thing that I wanted to say, and I'll try to keep this brief, is I'm a firm believer that Democrats not only should, but have to go down the impeachment path. I know this is against the conventional wisdom. A lot of people think, oh, look at what happened with Bill Clinton. Oh, look at what happened with Kavanaugh. If Democrats are just, you know, in impeachment mode, the voters are going to punish them in 2020. I personally disagree. But here's the thing. It's not a question of whether we want to or not. We have no choice. Mueller is either going to be muzzled by the new acting attorney general, or he's going to issue a report, and most likely it's going to be very damning for the president. In either case, Democrats have no choice. They have no choice but to institute committee hearings, call witnesses, issue a report, and that report can only lead to one conclusion. The only conclusion that report can lead to is that the Trump campaign committed acts that were criminal, and those are impeachable offenses. So this idea that we can somehow skirt it and just try to defeat Trump at the polls in 2020, maybe politically that might be more viable, although I personally don't think so, but it's just not reality. The base will not allow it. DJ, please tell everybody why I'm 100% wrong.
Actually, tell us why it's worse than we think, DJ.
Wait, hang on. Okay. It is not actually worse than we think.
Oh, good.
And Kevin is nowhere near 100% wrong on this.
I try.
I am.
Greg, you're completely wrong. let me remind everybody all of the consequences the Republican Party suffered in 2000 from impeachment.
They won the presidency.
Exactly. Note my silence at the consequences, because there were none.
That's right. Less than 2 years after the Senate acquitted Bill Clinton, Al Gore lost the presidency during a time of peace and prosperity. That is the damage that was done to the Republicans for impeaching Bill Clinton.
That's my point. The Republicans suffered absolutely no real consequences from impeachment. They lost a half dozen House seats in 1998, but they maintained control of the House. They maintained control of the House in 2000, and they got the presidency with it. But let's take a step and think back of all of the suffering the Republicans went through in 2014 and 2016 because of the Benghazi hearings. Oh, wait a minute. They didn't suffer any consequences for that either.
Correct.
So first and foremost, let the subpoenas flow. Let them be a river that drowns the entire city. There will be no political backfire because there wasn't any for the Republicans on stuff far more specious than what the Democrats in 2019 will be investigating. And two, if something requires the House Judiciary Committee to begin impeachment hearings, then let them hold those hearings. Let's see what comes out and let the facts determine where they go from here. That's not really so crazy. Granted, the four of us all figure that that will lead to some impeachment process on the floor of the House. But if that happens, it will be because the facts have driven us that way. Secondly, this notion that the Speaker of the House is so fucking important that we have to make sure it can't be Nancy Pelosi is a complete load of shit. I'm sorry, Greg, but the fact of the matter is the only Republicans who actually gained votes were those who had absolutely nothing to do with Nancy Pelosi because Nancy Pelosi is not a senator.
Well, you know how you'll know if Nancy Pelosi's speakership is in jeopardy is if Nancy Pelosi declines to run for speaker or withdraws from the leadership election.
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi, if she is running, it means she thinks she can win. Like I say, she knows that caucus better than anybody else.
Okay, last question before we change topics. Based on the results that we have, I'm curious, what type of a candidate do each of you think that should lead to for the presidential nomination in 2020 on the Democratic side?
Someone who can do what Kyrsten Sinema did, what Stacey Abrams did, what Alice Spanbarger did, what Elaine Loria did, and what all those victorious House candidates did, which is reach out to center and center-right voters and convince them to support a Democratic candidate. That's what we need. That's what the Democratic Party needs in 2020.
It was Abigail Spanberger. Remember, she yelled at Dave Brad about
my that. My apologies to the Congresswoman-elect for getting her first name wrong.
Okay. Rebecca, could you weigh in? Do you agree or disagree?
I've been saying this all along, and everybody yells at me for it. The strength in this particular wave election was matching the candidate to the district and allowing the messaging to be incredibly local. I don't know how to replicate that at the presidential level. So I'm not sure what type of candidate we need. I do think that we are going to need diversity on the ticket. We're going to need radical diversity in the spokespeople, in the surrogates for the campaign, and we're going to need to make people continue to feel heard. So who that happens to be as a person remains to be seen, but making people in the districts feel heard is going to be the most critical point.
And with that, you know what's a bellwether for how people vote? Whether they read a lot or not.
That's true.
If you're like me, the list of books you want to read is always expanding. You simply don't have time to read them all. And our sponsor, Blinkist, has solved your long list of must-read problems once and for all. Greg?
Yeah, you know, Blinkist is the only app that takes thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to the most impactful elements, you know, the juicy parts. So you can read them in under 15 minutes all on your phone or iPad or even your computer. With Blinkist, you will expand your knowledge and learn in just 15 minutes more than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere.
Like, you know you want to read more. I want to read more.
Nobody reads more than you, Rebecca.
Okay, that might be possible. I might be the wrong person to do this part of the segment. But who, other than me, has time to read? So let Blinkist do the dirty work of turning the pages and the comprehending of long sentences, you know, stuff Trump can't do, but you reap all the benefits. I listen to Blinkist when I'm driving, when I'm on the treadmill, or when I'm just, you know, running around the neighborhood, and when I don't want to listen to my kids while I'm cooking dinner.
Nice.
Blinkist has a massive library of titles to choose from timeless classics like A Brief History of Time to current Amazon bestsellers like Fear by Bob Woodward.
That's right. My personal recommendation for those of you who are trying to expand your reading list, check out the Blinkist summary of Never Eat Alone and Other Secrets to Success, One Relationship at a Time. It's a book that will help you improve your life, and you can do it in 15 minutes. Hey, listen, 5 million people are already using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. You should get started today. So right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for the More Perfect Union audience. Go to Blinkist.com/union to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/union to start your free 7-day trial. You can cancel at any time. Blinkist.com/union, and you will be a smarter person and a better voter.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
So let's talk about, there's a new sheriff in town, the new acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker, and he is not going to be kind, I don't think, to one Robert Mueller. Guys, how do you see this playing out?
I don't think he's going to be kind to anybody. He looks like a schmuck. Like, literally, he looks like a penis. Greg, that's number four. He looks like a really tall, aggressive penis.
That's five. And you can't first of all, now you're being unfair. Just because this guy looks freakishly large.
He is the real life manifestation of Vincent D'Onofrio's Wilson Fisk from The Daredevil.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so how do we see this going down? Everybody, we have our takes on Matt Whitaker, what he looks like. We all know where he's coming from vis-a-vis the Mueller investigation. What happens next?
I mean, I'm assuming he's a seat warmer. He's going to be as destructive as possible. He looks like a bull in a china shop, and he's there to do as much damage in as short a time as possible. But I don't think the Senate's going to tolerate a non-confirmed acting attorney general for very long.
Right. In addition, I don't think he's qualified. His past works don't qualify him. He won't.
Wait, no. So hawking patent protection for hot tubs isn't what you want in an attorney general.
But he's
Greg?
There. You guys can talk about whether he's qualified. I mean, I know arguments have been made about whether his appointment is constitutional or not. He's there. He's not
he's
quitting.
He's under investigation also.
Yes, he is under investigation.
Hold on. Trump isn't pulling him. He isn't recusing himself. He's there, and he's going to do whatever the F he wants. Yeah. So what happens now?
I would not be surprised if Matthew Whitaker, as acting attorney general, has already quashed an indictment of Donald Trump Jr.
I agree. Some people have speculated that Mueller may already have sealed indictments of people like Don Jr., Roger Stone, and others. My question, and I would love to be able to ask this of a real expert, of which none of us are, my question is, can Matt Whitaker revoke those indictments?
I think if the indictments are already issued, it's out of the hands of the judiciary, and it has become part of, or out of the hands of the Justice Department and in the hands of the judiciary, which is separate.
No, and I can actually give precedent for this. The Justice Department under the Bush administration actually won a case of election intimidation or something similar against various folks in Philadelphia who were allegedly intimidating Republicans into not voting during the 2008 election. The Obama administration essentially told the Justice Department, don't pursue the case anymore, and essentially just drop the whole thing. And that's what their lawyers had to do because the Obama administration told the Justice Department to do it. It is given that Matthew Whitaker as acting attorney general can certainly, since he has not recused himself, tell Robert Mueller and his team, yes, I know you've put an indictment against Donald Trump Jr. or God knows who else because you sent in your report to me. I am ordering you to ask the judge to dismiss that case. That Matthew Whitaker can do, And I wouldn't be surprised if he has done it. I would not be surprised if he has done it already.
And even if he doesn't do it, another thing that I'm not clear on is, let's say there's a sealed indictment and Whitaker doesn't or doesn't have the authority to pull it, but Mueller gets, you know, relieved of his duties. What happens to that sealed indictment? Does the court make it public? Again, I don't know the answer to this, but I do know this. Whitaker is going to make it much more difficult for Robert Mueller to do his job. I think on that we could all
True.
Agree. Okay?
Yes.
So the question is, what happens next? Because I got to tell you something. I don't think Robert Mueller is going to break the law. I don't think Robert Mueller will go public with his report if Whitaker either heavily redacts it or just ices it entirely.
True.
And I don't think that he is going to stand up to Whitaker and say, hey, you can't do this to me. I'm challenging your authority. Robert Mueller, from everything that I've heard, is a by-the-books guy who's in his 70s, mm-hmm. who does not want to go to jail in his 80s. So
no.
Robert True. Mueller's hands may be legally tied. And this goes back to what I was saying in the first segment. If the Democratic Congress doesn't step up and show they have the balls to protect Mueller and follow up on his investigation, 2 years of work will go out the door because nobody cares what happens to Paul Manafort. Nobody cares what happens to Michael Cohen. Nobody cares what happens to Michael Flynn. Either we do something about the Trump campaign and the man who's sitting in the White House, or we let him go scot-free.
I am going to agree with Kevin on pretty much everything that he said earlier, but I'm actually going to answer his rhetorical question because, frankly, answering rhetorical questions is probably how I landed on this podcast anyway because it pissed so many people off. The answer that I would give is, or the response I would give is, that if Mueller is shunted out and replaced, then it's up to Mueller's replacement. If Mueller's replacement chooses to ask the court to
He won't be replaced. He'll just be summarily fired.
Well, yeah, it'll be shut down, at which point it'll be up to the Justice Department itself. And if the Justice Department says, we would rather that case be dismissed, then the judge will likely go along with it and the indictment will disappear because the case will be dismissed. Getting to your other point, though, come January 3rd, the House Judiciary Committee can at any time invite or compel Robert Mueller to testify about what he has found. And Robert Mueller, who, as you said, Kevin, is generally looking to follow the law to the letter, would certainly not reject a subpoena from the House Judiciary Committee.
Oh, of course. You're right. Of course.
Nor do I think he would reject a job offer from the Government Oversight Committee if
Correct.
He were fired from justice and
also
they offered to hire him to conduct a similar investigation.
Which I predict is going to happen. I predict that.
Right. And this, going back to the earlier segment, is why the Democrats who are in control of those committees as of January 3rd need to investigate and oversee as much as humanly possible, and why Greg is completely wrong when he says they should pass that all by.
Greg, do you want to weigh in on that since we kind of beat up on you probably unfairly?
No, I'm cowering in the corner. I'm just looking. Oh my gosh.
The More Perfect Union, real debate with a lot more alcohol.
Okay, so now let's turn our attention to one Jim Acosta of CNN, who the President of the United States claims are the enemies of the people, along with the rest of the news media. Guys, I think we'll all agree that if Jim Acosta is anything, he's not the enemy of the people. My question is he a handler of the truth, or is he just a guy who accosts interns? Rebecca?
Well, okay, I want to say I feel a kinship to Jim Acosta because, like Jim Acosta, I am blocked by Trump. I'm blocked by him on Twitter. Jim Acosta literally can't get through the doors of the White House. I don't know if I could. I haven't tried.
I don't think you have White House privileges.
I don't. Jim Acosta and I have everything in common. Jim, call me. I watched that video and Acosta kept talking and the intern tried to take the microphone from him and he sort of dodged and weaved and put up an arm.
Hang on,
to block
Rebecca,
her.
Did you watch the actual video?
I watched the actual video. I did not watch the Putin video.
Okay, so you did not watch the InfoWars KGB version that
the
Sarah
doctored
Sanders.
Video?
No,
yes.
What Kellyanne Conway informs us, it was just sped up, so it looks like a Keystone Cops video in Kellyanne's world, I don't know. If it had been April Ryan doing the same thing, it wouldn't have bothered me. So he was aware that there were hands reaching for the microphone. Who those hands were attached to was pretty immaterial to him. He just wanted to get his question asked, and then he folded his hands. It's not like he was starting a fight with this person. So I don't think his actions against the House intern were egregious, and I certainly don't think it evidenced any malice. But the other thing is, let's remember, on Trump's very first press event, the one with all the stacks of paper, where he was trying to prove to us that his business involved paper.
His first press conference, are you talking about?
Yeah, the very first presser he did, right. Right after he was elected, when he was saying he was going to decouple himself from his business, Acosta tried to ask him a question, and Trump went, "No, you are fake news. No, no, you are fake news. I'm not answering your question." He's had it out for Jim Acosta since day one. So this is his spite finally flowing free, and he's psyched just to do this. It's complete revenge. It's crap. It doesn't have anything to do with that intern.
I agree. And I posted this on Facebook this week. My answer for CNN, again, if they had balls, this is what they would do. If Jim Acosta does not have press credential rights to be a White House correspondent and go into the briefings, they should immediately give that assignment to Don Lemon and give Jim Acosta his own 1 hour at 10 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock at night on the East Coast on CNN and make him now the face of CNN News. That would be a double ball shot to Donald Trump, and that's what CNN should do. I wish that these networks and these cable networks and these newspapers would develop some balls and take this man on, because he's trying to destroy you guys, and you guys better stand up to him or he will succeed.
One of my friends suggested that every reporter in the press pool should now just raise their hand and say, "Hey, Jim Acosta wanted me to ask," and just preface every question with, "Jim Acosta wants to know," just to troll the White House.
That's pretty good. But we are now finally, God knows how late into this podcast, that at the point where Kevin and I actually disagree on something.
Thank God.
Finally.
Yeah, we're finally getting to the debate part with it.
What happened to Jim Acosta is bad for the First Amendment. It is bad for the free press, I have no doubt. But it is awesome for Jim Acosta, because he is now the go-to guy for every leaker who has something against Donald Trump. Jim Acosta will be just fine. Jim Acosta's career will be just fine. The rest of us?
Hey, let me ask you a question then. So a couple of years ago during the campaign, Corey Lewandowski, who is in my eyes one of the biggest scumbags in the world, okay? I have to admit, one of the biggest scumbags in the world. But there was a moment during the campaign where a young reporter, a female reporter from Breitbart, was asking Trump a question. It was probably a smart question, and he reached out and he grabbed her by the shoulder or by the arm and he pulled her back.
Lewandowski did.
Right. And he said, "Okay, that's enough. I need to talk to you." Okay. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
And she claimed she was assaulted. Okay.
Which now, she was.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fine. But whether he jerked her back and we've watched the video, or whether he said, "Excuse me, I need to," I'm sure he didn't say "excuse me" because he's a scumbag. Or now, Rebecca said that whether it was a female or a male, and if Corey Lewandowski would have done that to a male, would it have been different? Would a male have said he would have been assaulted? So the question is, when dealing with reporters,
given the societal Y chromosome advantage, if Corey Lewandowski had done that to a male reporter, he would have gotten a bloody nose.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, no, I mean Corey Lewandowski. Offensively, not offensively, but offensively laid hands on a person and yanked them, which is not what Jim Acosta did. Jim Acosta threw up an arm to shield himself from a person who was reaching into his personal space. And the hand was, it was a flat hand. It wasn't a fist. It wasn't a pushing hand. It was, his hand was facing himself.
So was, you know, the female, was the female intern.
No, she was not assaulting him. She was attempting to take back a piece of equipment. He was attempting to deny her the piece of equipment. Neither one of them assaulted the other. It was just a scuffle to grab a microphone. And it wasn't even a scuffle. It was hand withdrawn, hand withdrawn. That's all it was.
Let's focus on the key issue here. The key issue here is that the President of the United States thinks that anybody who interviews him should be utterly obsequious and docile. He doesn't fucking understand how any of this works. I mean,
well,
I know I'm the only...
DJ,
he understands.
He is purposely being confrontational. We got a preview of the next 2 years of Donald Trump in that press conference. It's not that he doesn't understand. It's that he wants to have a confrontational 2 years with the press, with the Democrats, with the world. And that's what we're going to get.
I mean, and that wasn't even it, that press. There was nothing unusual about that press conference. That's how he behaves when he's in front of the press. He's unhinged. He's bizarre, and he's an asshole. Like, this isn't news that he's been like that at every presser he's held.
And I remember when Ronald Reagan dealt with reporters that he did not like, reporters who asked questions he didn't like. And he almost always deflected it with humor. I still remember.
Are you comparing Donald Trump to Ronald Reagan?
Yes, but he's doing it unfavorably.
But I mean, even in an unfavorable light, that's like comparing my basketball game to Michael Jordan. It's just ridiculous.
Well, exactly. You can't point out the ridiculousness until you actually make the comparison, Kevin. For Donald Trump, it's all about nastiness. For Donald Trump, it's all about invective. For Donald Trump, it's all about anger. That is the difference between – that is one of the many differences between Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump. My point is this. Ronald Reagan understood that even if there were press members who did not like him and asked questions he didn't want to hear and they didn't want to answer, he could not essentially say, "You're an enemy of the people." Ronald Reagan didn't do that. He was much more disarming.
Well, because Ronald Reagan understood the value of a charm offensive.
Right.
It worked very well for him in multiple careers. Donald Trump has never had to use charm. He's used aggressiveness.
Well, he uses it in private, from what I understand. He just won't
he uses it in private.
Yeah, thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
You said my point for me. Thank you.
But when he's dealing with men, he chooses to use this aggressive posture. He's very, silverback gorilla about things.
Right, because men are competition to the women he wants to get laid.
Yeah.
With.
But the women don't want to lay him anymore. He hasn't noticed that part.
Well, speaking of getting laid and charm offensives and everything else, it's pretty obvious that all of us are not Trump fans. But for people who are, there's now a new dating site. It's called Donald Dating. And we just learned about this morning. Apparently, there is a new dating app that has been created for people who are single and want to date, but find that when they try to date on a regular dating site, the first thing they see in somebody's profile is, "Don't contact me if you like Trump." So some very enterprising young person created this app for people who do like Trump. And guys, do you think this is going to catch on?
You know what this is? I've actually said this on Facebook Messenger, but I'm going to say it now here in the podcast so everybody can hear it. This is the embodiment of civil disobedience to the law of natural selection. That's what this is.
This isn't the first such app. I remember writing about an app like this during the campaign. Apparently, Donald Trump fans really can only get along with each other. And, more power to him. The marketplace exists for entrepreneurial ideas like this, and if there really is a market for it and they can make a go of it, rock on. I think a lot of people on Tinder will be grateful not to have to swipe. What direction do you swipe on Tinder if you don't like things?
Swipe left.
Okay. Yeah, they won't have to do that quite as often when they see, a MAGA hat in people's profile. So it's fine. I mean, I'm not going to get on the dating site, but I will say that the importance of politics in relationships can be pretty significant. I met my husband on a dating site a really long time ago. And, you know, two of the first things I found out about him were that he was a Democrat and an Ohio State fan. And I'm like, well, I can have drinks with that guy. You know, that's enough for a conversation. And, you know, we've been married for almost 13 years now, so.
Okay, so Greg, I'm going to throw to you first. Now, obviously, you're a married, happily married man, and you're not on any dating sites. And you're not a Donald Trump supporter. But if you were composing your profile essay for Donald dating, just give us a taste of what a couple of lines might be like.
Oh, if I was?
Yeah.
I'll
help you out. Holding hands while walking along the border wall, that might be one.
That would be one. My fetishes would be kids in cages. What? It's what gets them off.
Roses are red, violets are blue. I hate blacks, Hispanics, and Jews.
Oh, my God.
And on that semi-racist note, we want to thank everybody for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at hashtag MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timelines so your friends can discover us as well. And if you like political debate and would like to join us in political debate between shows, please check out the Facebook group that we're all in. It's called Open Fire Politics. We're all there and we'd love to see you there too. And with that, gang, what do you see coming this week?
See, I'm about to take my politics hyper-local and start bugging my newly elected county council to put some sidewalks in my neighborhood.
Oh, sidewalks are a good thing.
You know what? Because sometimes you just need to think about walking to school a little bit more safely and not getting run over.
And I'm going to suggest that they install sprinkler systems overhead throughout my state. That's what we need.
Oh my gosh, yeah, stay safe.
Yeah, if you need to evacuate, you can come to my house. We have a guest room and a very friendly dog.
We got two friendly dogs, not that it's a contest, but I'm hoping to win again.